Okay, welcome to, lecture number five. The schluss of our learning should be a refuah for Chaim Yisachar ben Chaim Mushkat, the covered gadol Rav Sacks.
Last year, we were discussing the concept of Arvus, Ko Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh, a sense of communal responsibility, specifically in the realm of mitzvahs, that one has to see to it that not merely that they fulfill the mitzvahs Hashem, but they will allow others to be able to fulfill the mitzvah as well. And we had pointed out that the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Gimel, that one of the sources of Arvus is based on the Parsha of the Tochacha. That the Tocha is mentioned twice in Chumash and Parsas Bechukosai, as well as in Parshas Kisavo, with a marked difference. In Chumash Vayikra, there the Tocha is mentioned in the plural, in Bechukosai Telechu, Beloshim Rabim, and yet this is not true when it comes to the Tocha in Kisavo. And the Gemara assumes that that's an essential difference with many other sources that we cited, that Rabim often means a mitzvah which is given to each and every individual. Many people are obligated to fulfill the mitzvah. Lashon Yachid means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was addressing the collective whole, the single unit of Knesset Yisrael. And therefore the Gemara tells us, by virtue of the fact that that Tochacha is written B'Lashon Yachid, so that emphasizes that all of Knesset Yisrael is treated as a single unit, as Guf Echad, as a single entity, and therefore the Gemara derives the principle of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebos. In fact, we pointed out, the Gemara tells us in Megillah and Daf Lamed Aleph that there is a special Takanas Ezra to read the Tochacha twice a year, to read it before the Yontif of Shavuos, and to read it as well before the Yontif of Rosh Hashanah, in order to enter into the Yom HaDin with this concept of Arvus, of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebezeh, to appreciate that sense of what the Tochacha represents. You know, Tosfos points out in Megillah Daf Lamed Aleph that is why, for example, if you have two Shabbosos in between Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, it is necessary to split up either Nitzavim Vayelech or to split up Matos and Masai. So what do we do? Well, one reasoning would have argued, Tosfos writes, Shalo, the base Midrash Shor Rabbeinu Nissim, that look, you have two of the smallest Parshios, Nitzavim Vayelech, laying those two together. And Matos and Masai, quite long Parshios, why not separate those two? And yet we do the opposite. When you have two Shabbosos, you need an additional Kriya Satorah. We combine Matos Masai, a huge Kriya Satorah, and we split Nitzav Vayedach. The Tosfos simply asks, why exactly is that necessary? And you know what Tosfos answers? That the Takanas Ezra is to lain Parshas Kisavo as well as Parshas Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah. And if you were to separate Matos and Masai, and you would combine Nitzavim Vayelech, you would end up that on Shabbos Shuva, you'd be laning Nitzavim Vayelech, and that you cannot do. So Chazal arranged the whole sequence of the Parshios in order to ensure that we are laning Kisavo and Nitzavim, the Parsha of Arvos, immediately before Rosh Hashanah. Chazal so beautifully arranged the parsha, sometimes don't even realize that this was a special, special Takanas Ezra. If you look in Maseches Sofrim, in the bottom of Maseches Sofrim, there's the Pirush of the Kisei Rachamim. He argues, and he quotes Nevudraham based on the Yerushalmi, that you know, the early minhag in Eretz Yisrael was they didn't lay a full parsha each and every Shabbos. They used to have a triennial cycle. And therefore, when it came before Rosh Hashanah, they were not in the middle of Sefer Dvarim. They weren't holding by Parshas Kisavo and Parshas Nitzavim. They would take out the separate Sefer Torah and they would lane, right, these Parshios. After all, this is critical. This is part of the lesson of Yamim Naraim. And indeed, he argues that there were separate brachos that were recited on this Kriya Satorah. We recite separate brachos on every Aliyah. And Chazal arranged the Seder so conveniently that sometimes we don't even realize that this is a special Kriya Satorah before Shavuos and before Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the Mishnah tells us that Ein Mafsikin Beklolos, that one is not allowed to have any Hosefa during the Parsha of the tofacha. So the Gemara has two reasons, and we go into Aflamet Aleph, why exactly that is true. One possibility is as follows. The Gemara cites the posuk of Musa Hashem b'ni al-timas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you Musa. It's inappropriate to interrupt. Imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving the Divrei Tochacha, and all of a sudden you end Aliyah, and you make a Meshuberach, and the rabbi will get up and describe something about the coming Kriya Sator, not in the middle of the Musar Hashem. Musar Hashem b'ni Altimas. But then the Gemara quotes the second answer, Rish Lakish, that no, that you're going to have a Hosafa in the middle of the Tochacha, Ein Mevarachin Al HaPeronimus. You can't recite a bracha on a davar ra. No, all gabayim know that if you're going to add a hosafa, you have to make sure you're not going to end an aliyah on a davar ra. Now a person is going to be reciting a bracha, right, on that particular theme. So therefore, don't have a hosafa in the middle of the tochacha, because after all, in mevarchin ala peronius, the Taz raises the following kashin, tochavav, that what do you mean, in mevarchin ala peronius? That's good for us, bizman hazen, because we recite brachos on each and every aliyah, but Ein Mafsik in Beklalos is a Mishnah. And in the time of the Mishnah, the first Ola, the Kohen, used to recite one bracha, and the Achron used to recite the last bracha. If you were to have a Hosefa, someone else would get up in lane, but you wouldn't be reciting any brachos in any case. That's Mataz's Kasha. So if the first answer of the Gemara, don't interrupt the Dvar Musar, I understand, but Reish Lakish, how can Reish Lakish say that that is the meaning of the Mishnah? It makes sense for us, post-Mishnah, but how does that make sense in the Mishnah? So the Kisir Achanim writes in the Sefer Sofrim exactly that point. This was a special, special Kriya Sator. This was not just the Parsha Sashavua. This was a special Takana. And part of the takana based on Yerushalmi was to recite individual brachos on the parsha of the Tochacha. And therefore, if they were to have a Hosafa, even in the time of the Mishnah, they would cite individual brachos, and therefore, in mafsikin, the klalos. And therefore, an overt takana's Ezra, to lay in the Tochacha, prior to Shavuos, prior to Rosh Hashanah, before Rosh Hashanah, that theme of Arvos. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan Perlauer, in his Pirush to Sefer Mitzvos of Sadigom, writes the following. The Rambam is very bothered. This is found in Sefer Mitzvos in Shoresh Gimel. Shoresh Gimel is, the Rambam writes, that in order to count a mitzvah as part of the 613 mitzvahs, it has to be a mitzvah which in principle is no heges ladaros. It has to be something which is enduring. If it's only a horasha, it was something that was given to Knesset Yisrael for a limited amount of time, that's not to be counted as Taryag Mitzvos. So many of the obligations that Knesset Yisrael had when they left Eretz Mitzrayim, that's not part of Taryag Mitzvos. To place the dam on the mezuzos, on the mashkof, not part of Taryag Mitzvos. So the Rambam is very bothered because the halachos gedolos counted the brachos and klalos. The brachos and klalos as one of the 613 mitzvos. See, the Bahag not only had mitzvos asei, mitzvos lo asei, but also themes, parshios. And one of the parshios that the Bahag counts as tariq mitzvos is brachos and klalos. So the Rambam writes, the brachos and klalos, that's something which is noheges bedaros. The brachos and klalos were, right, something that occurred then, that is not something that occurs now, and therefore, why is it that it should be counted in Min HaMitzvos? The Ramban answers that, you know, when it comes, for example, to placing the dam, mezuzos, mashkos, that act only happened then, and the effect, the consequence, only happened then as well. Brachos and klolos, it's true, the ceremony of the brachos and klolos only occurred then, but the impact, the effect, the kiyum, l'richem levadchem, that certainly is enduring, and therefore this is a theme, a mitzvah, a parsha, which is indeed no heges ladaros. That's what the Rabban answers. Rav Yochanan Perlauer answers that no, maybe there is a mitzvah which is actually no heges ladaros, which is derived from the parsha, the tocha, and that's what the Bahag has in mind. And the Bahag counts this as one of tarig mitzvos, and that is the mitzvah of Arvos, of Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zebozeh. That is derived from this parsha of the Tochacha, and therefore the Halachos Gedolos counts this in Minyan HaMitzvos as one of the Tariq Mitzvos, the mitzvah of Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zebozeh, the mitzvah, the chiyuv of arvos. And that no doubt relates to the issue that we left off discussing. To what extent do we view arvos as an independent mitzvah? To what extent do we argue that no, arvos is not independent, but arvos is part of each and every mitzvah. My obligation in a given mitzvah, whatever that mitzvah is, whether it's lulav, shofar, kiddush, tefillin, is not only that I perform the mitzvah, but arvos demands that I have to see to it that others fulfill and others participate in that mitzvah as well. Not as an independent mitzvah, but rather as part of each and every mitzvah. For example, the mitzvah raises the following kasha, Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavtes, and the mitzvah raises as well in Perek Hei of Hilchos Brachos, that, you know, don't we have a principle of kol mi she'eino mechuyav hadavar, eino motzi asara b'midei chavasa, that if I am exempt from a mitzvah, I cannot perform the mitzvah on your behalf. But yet, don't we have a principle as well as yatza motzi? That even though, for example, I made Kiddush, I can make Kiddush a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth time, as long as each time I'm doing so for you. So, how do you understand these two principles? Why shouldn't we argue that if I already made Kiddush, I am already Yotzei, in which case, I am now Eino Mechuyav Badavar, and call me Shein Mechuyav Badavar, in a motzi eser rabbi, dechavasa. That's the kasha that the Ritva raises in the Hos Brachos Perakei and Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavtes. And the Ritva's answer is, no, it's a misnomer. You made Kiddush, good you made Kiddush, but you are adayin Mechuyav Badavar. You are still obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush because your obligation in a given mitzvah does not only relate to your performance alone, but rather the arvus of that particular mitzvah as well. And that seems to underscore, to highlight the understanding of arvus not as an independent mitzvah, but rather as an inherent part of each and every mitzvah. My obligation in the mitzvah is the arvus of that mitzvah as well. And we pointed out two instances where Rabbi Kveger highlights this point, and then we'll discuss a third now as well. The two places that we discussed in the last year, right, was the following issue. The Rush writes that women are excluded from arvos. That's a discussion that the Rush has. How does one resolve the apparent stira between the Gemara Brachos and Daf Chav, the Gemara Brachos and Daf Memches? Because the Gemara Brachos and Daf Memches discusses whether women are obligated in benching min HaTorah, or whether only obligated midrabanan. And the Gemara says, what is the difference? They have to bench. What difference does it make whether it's min HaTorah? What difference does it make whether it's drabanan? So the Gemara, for the difference is whether they can bench on behalf of. Can they be motzi a man in birchas hamazon? If everyone is obligated min HaTorah, then yes. But if their obligation is only drabanan, that's where the Gemara writes that mawasi drabanan umapik daraisa. When it was only obligated in a mitzvah midrabanan, can't be motzi when it was obligated in a mitzvah min HaTorah. The Rush is quite bothered, because the Rush's view is that in order to be chayv in benching min HaTorah, you must eat kedei sviya ve'achalta v'savata. You are thoroughly satiated, then you're obligated in benching min HaTorah. If you eat a minimal amount of kazayis, you're only obligated in benching midrabanan, but yet, one who eats a kazayis can recite Birchas HaMazon to be motzi one who eats kedei sviya. So don't you see from that Gemara Brachos and Daf Memches that the bottom line is that a drabanan can be motzi a daraisa? What is the difference between a woman who is only obligated drabanan and a man who only eats a kazayis? The Rush writes there is a fundamental difference. Men are obligated in the mitzvah Birchas HaMazon and in Arvus of Birchas HaMazon, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zebozeh. And therefore, even if I only eat a minimal amount, I can still be motzi in Birchas HaMazon. But if women are exempt from Birchas HaMazon, women are exempt from Arvus. And therefore, they cannot be motzi one who is obligated in benching min HaTorah. So he pointed out that Noah Debian understands that to be a principle, a difficult principle. What is the source of such a principle that women are exempt from Arvus, why would we assume that women are exempt from Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh? Rabbi Kveger writes in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph that that's not what the Rosh means. The Rosh means that your obligation in Arvus of a mitzvah cannot exceed your obligation in that given mitzvah. Part of your chiyuv of each and every mitzvah is the arvus component of that mitzvah. So look, if you're obligated in a mitzvah, you're obligated in the arvus of that particular mitzvah. But if you're exempt from a mitzvah, can you be obligated in the arvus of that mitzvah? That is what Rabbi Kveger writes is the meaning of the Rush. And therefore the Rush writes that, look, men undeniably are obligated in benching, they're obligated in arvus of benching, so even if a man only ate a kazayis, he can motzi one who ate kadesviyah. But if women indeed are exempt min ha-Torah from birkas hamazon, how can we argue that they're obligated in the arvus of a mitzvah when they are exempt from the mitzvah itself? That's the Chiddush of Rabbi Kveger. In other words, that arvus means, let's use that language of the Ritzvah, that adayin mukhiyav badavar. Arvus means what? You fulfill the mitzvah. Everybody eats together and you benched. You fulfilled your mitzvah benching. There are those present that did not get benched. So therefore, arvus dictates that you have to see to it that they will fulfill the mitzvah birchas hamazon as well. But if you are exempt from that given mitzvah, you're exempt from the arvus of that particular mitzvah. In other words, arvus means that lo yatzi rechavasa, you haven't yet satisfied your obligation. You are still mechuyah b'davar. That is true if it is a mitzvah that you are obligated to perform. The chiddush of Rabbi Kveger is, if you'll ask that, are you obligated in the mitzvah of arvus? It depends on whether you are obligated in the mitzvah. Because one could have argued that the opposite should be true. That whether in fact there is arvus in the mitzvah does not depend on me, but rather it depends on him, on the other individual. No? There's a Jew who wasn't yet known to Lulav and Esrog. The fact that a woman is exempt from Lulav and Esrog, does that really mean there's no arvus? Maybe one could argue that arvus as an independent mitzvah dictates that I have to see to it that you fulfill your mitzvah. And as such, that whether there is arvus in that mitzvah depends on your chiyuv, not on my chiyuv, but that's Rabbi Kveger writes, that arvus is all from the perspective of the one who is being motzi the other, not the one who in fact is being yotzei. Why is that true? Because Rabbi Kveger understands arvus as an extension of my obligation in a given mitzvah. And therefore, you're exempt from a mitzvah, you're exempt from the arvus of that mitzvah. There's a further point, Rabbi Kveger, that we mentioned, and that is the Gemara debates whether women are obligated in benching min ha-Torah, whether women are obligated in benching midrabanan. Why midrabanan? Tosfos writes, because women are excluded from bris and Torah. And bris and Torah, the Gemara Brachos, Daf Mem Ches, is an inherent part of Birkas HaMazon. It seems from Tosfos that the need to acknowledge bris and Torah is midaraisa. Because if the whole need to mention bris and Torah was only derabanan, so therefore, how can that be a reason that women are exempt min ha-Torah from Birkas HaMazon? But it seems, according to Tosfos, the need to acknowledge bris and Torah, that is a mitzvah deraisa, because the mitzvah writes, it's only a din derabanan. You know, it's an important, important issue, whether bris and Torah and Birkas HaMazon is deraisa, or whether it's derabanan. Now, Rabbi Kveger points out, let's assume a person has a suffix as to whether I should recite Birkas HaMazon, or whether I should recite an Al HaMechiyah. Is that a suffix deraisa, or is that a suffix derabanan? Rabbi Kveger writes, you know, that should depend on, let's assume you should have recited Birkas HaMazon, but you ended up only reciting Bracha Achas Me'in Shalosh. Are you Yotzei Min HaTorah with the Bracha Achas Me'in Shalosh? So one issue would be as follows, that the need for three brachas, is that really deraisa? Or no? As long as you mention the necessary themes, that's sufficient in HaTorah. Or one could raise the following issue, the need to acknowledge bris in Torah. Is that midaraisa in benching? Or is that only derabanan? Because in Al HaMechiyah, there's no mention of bris in Torah. If you argue, let's assume as the Ritva does, that Bris and Torah is only Derabanan, one could argue that a suffix as to whether to recite the Brachachas Mein Shalosh or whether to recite Birchas HaMazon is only a suffix Derabanan, because Min HaTorah Yotze with either one. Now that's the Chiddush of Rabbi Kivager. That's very relevant. No, in Kuf Samaches, in Arachayim, that's the whole pasta babatisman. Right? Simen, is this a Mizonos? Is this a Motzi? So it's interesting, no? Is that a suffix Daraisa or a suffix Darabanan when it comes, for example, to Birchas HaMazon? But it's an important issue. Pashup Shavon could argue, according to Tosus, if Bris and Torah is Min HaTorah, so therefore even Min HaTorah you're not going to be Yotze, just simply with going ahead and reciting a brachachas me'in shalosh. It's necessary to acknowledge that case of Bris and Torah. So the Kveger is bothered by the following. The Gemara writes, if women are chayv in Birchas HaMazon, Min HaTorah, they can be motzi men in Birchas HaMazon. But Rabbi Kveger, based on Tosos, writes the following. Even if women are obligated in benching Min HaTorah, but they're exempt from Bris and Torah. So my Birchas HaMazon, Tosos says, requires Bris and Torah. Her Birchas HaMazon does not require Bris and Torah. So how is it possible for her to be motzi me in Birchas HaMazon? So Rabbi Kveger writes a chiddush. You know what? She can't be motzi in Bris and Torah. She can recite everything, but you have to recite the Bris and Torah yourself. In other words, that's Rabbi Kveger l'shita saying, that the arvus of a mitzvah cannot transcend your obligation in the mitzvah itself, because the arvus is a part of each and every mitzvah. And therefore, if your Birchas HaMazon does not contain Bris and Torah, in such a case, the arvus can be everything else, but not Bris and Torah. I could have argued that, no, I'm obligated to benching. And even if my Birchas HaMazon doesn't require Bris and Torah, but his Birchas HaMazon does, so I can be motzi you in that element as well. That's exactly Rabbi Kveger's point, that no, that arvus cannot transcend, cannot exceed your obligation in the given mitzvah. And here's the third example. Whether you find Rabbi Kveger as well, this is elsewhere. This is Megillah and Daf Yutes Amadeus. That's what the Mishnah describes. If a person is a cheresh, who is Eino Shomea, he's medaber, he can articulate, but he cannot hear. So in such a case, exempt from Kriyas HaMegillah, because after all, right, he will not be able to hear the Kriyas HaMegillah. So if he's an Eino Shomea, so such a cheresh is exempt from Kriyas HaMegillah. And as such, that not only can he not read the Megillah himself, but he cannot be motzi someone else in Kriyas HaMegillah as well. Rabbi Kveger is very bothered by that. No? Why not argue as follows, that good, the Cheresh himself cannot hear the Kriyas HaMegillah, but maybe that should be viewed in a more technical sense, but what's wrong with him reciting the Kriyas HaMegillah to be motzi someone else who is able to hear the Megillah being read? Why should one argue that the Cheresh cannot be motzi achem b'deis al-chalasso? So that's exactly what Rabbi Kveger writes as well. Now wait a second, if a Cheresh is exempt from the mitzvah, even if his exemption is because he cannot hear, and that only applies to him, but it doesn't apply to the person who he is being motzi, but nonetheless, if he's exempt from Kriyas HaMegillah, he's exempt from the arvos of Kriyas HaMegillah, and therefore, in a mechlivadover, he cannot go ahead and be motzi another in the particular mitzvah. Again, a third place. Rabbi Kveger writes that all of this is from the perspective of the motzi, not from the perspective of the one who is being yotzei. And why should that be? Because arvus is viewed, according to Rabbi Kveger, as an extension of each and every mitzvah itself. And therefore, that concept of arvus, as the Ritva writes, I'm a dayim mechuyev adavar. Arvus is not a new mechayev, that I become a bar chiyuva as a result of arvus, but rather as a function of arvus, I am a dayim mechuyev adavar. I haven't yet discharged my obligation, but the arvus will never transcend, will never exceed my obligation in a given mitzvah. And hence, right, that principle of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. When the Ritva describes describes that concept of arvus of kol yisrael arevim zebazeh. The Ritva is mentioned in Rosh Hashanah Chotes and Hilchos Brachos and Perakei. The Ritva describes that after all, that all of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be, in a very literal sense, guf echad, a single unit, a single entity. And therefore, right, if I am obligated in a mitzvah, I'm obligated to see to it that you perform the mitzvah as well. The guf echad, just as Yerushalmi writes, that if a person, right, is banging in a nail, and by mistake, right, the person, right, bangs his thumb, right, and all of a sudden, one would not expect, the Yerushalmi writes, in the spirit of nekama, that that hand should pick up the hand then and hit the other hand that did so. It's all guf echad. The entire body is going to suffer equally. So therefore, the same is true when it comes to the concept of arvus of Knesset Yisrael. All of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be, in a very literal sense, that which is guf echad. I had once mentioned as a fascinating chiddush that Tosus writes in Menachos on Daf Lamed Zayin, where Tosus describes as follows. I didn't Torah, Tosus writes, that was presented before Shlomo HaMelech. A person died, and the sons now appeared, right, in order to divide the state, the Yarsha, Chalukah Sayrusha. And all of a sudden, one son walks in, right, the Siamese twin, two heads, right, one body. And that individual demanded, Pishnai, that he's entitled to, right, two different portions of the Yarsha. And all the other brothers claim that that was not true. No, only a single brother, and therefore he's entitled to one portion, not entitled to two portions. That's what Tosus writes. Amaisa Shaya Shlomo HaMelech. No, whether you're entitled to two portions or a single portion in the state of the deceased father. So Tosus writes, Shlomo HaMelech Paskin Bet, Siamese twin, I understand, but Guf Echad, right, a single individual, only entitled to one portion of Nachum. Tosus doesn't explain how Shlomo HaMelech knew that that was the case. Tosus just writes that that was the psak of Shlomo HaMelech, but Tosus doesn't explain how he was able to arrive at that decision. So in the Sefer Menachos, on the very daf, right next to Tosus, in the margin, in the gloss, is the Sheet Mekobetzes. So if you look in Sheet Mekobetzes, in Os Yurches, Sheet Mekobetzes writes the following, that Shlomo HaMelech empirically, right, did a test in order to determine whether one portion or whether two portions. And the Sheet Mekobetzes explains that Shlomo HaMelech took a sack and he covered one of the heads. And Shlomo HaMelech proceeded to pour hot water on the other exposed head. And Shlomo HaMelech took a step back and waited to see who would react. Who would yell out as a result of the pain of the hot water? So, Sheet Mekobetzes writes, Shlomo HaMelech did so, and the covered head screamed out in pain. So, Shlomo HaMelech paskened guf echad. Sheet Mekobetzes. It's in the Shas. Take a look. That's the case. That's what Shlomo HaMelech knew. Guf echad. The measure, not the litmus test, the criterion to determine as to whether guf echad or shnei gufim is the ability of one to feel another's pain. That's the chiddush that Sheet Mekobetzes writes. Now, if one would have been ambivalent too, that's an indicator of shnei gufim, right? But since that was not the case, that was the psak that's considered to be guf echad. The Ritva writes that arvus means that all of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be, in a very real sense, that guf echad. Now, the Rambam writes that you have to be able to be mishtatef in the simcha of other, Rachman al-Islam, to be able to feel the pain of another. The Rambam writes in Chashuv that if a person is poresh mi darkei hatzibur, that a person kind of doesn't align himself with the tzibur. The Rambam writes that afal pishlo avra avera, even if there are no other averas that the person violates, eino chelak olam haba. Rav Sreishik once commented that there are two girsos in the Haggadah Shal Pesach. Now, here on the celebrated night of the Lel Seder, now, so the Rasha, Mahavodazos Lachem. The Rasha excludes himself from the Tzibur Lachem Velolo. And here, two different yourselves, that of the Rambam and that of the Mechilta, Ulefi Shahotzi Esatzma Min HaKlau. The Girsa we have in the Haggadah follows the Rambam. Ulefi Shahotzi Esatzma Min HaKlau. kafar beika. If you look in the Mechilta, there is one extra letter. Ulefi shahotzi yasatsa min haklal, v'kafar be'ikar. V'kafar, avav, v'kafar be'ikar. That vav is pretty essential. Now, ulefi shahotzi yasatsa min haklal, v'kafar be'ikar means A and B. This guy is a Russian. Why is he a Russian? Well, number one, listen to him. He kind of doesn't see himself as part of the tzibur. And in addition to that, he also denies Hashgachas Hashem. That makes you into Russia. A and B. But if you take out the Vav, the whole emphasis of the statement is such a different one. No, it's not A and B, but rather causality. Your Purish min HaTzibur, that is denial. That itself is considered to be an act of Kfira. In other words, as the Rambam writes, without violating any other Avera at all, merely excluding yourself from, right, that itself is considered to be an act of denial of the Torah Hashem. Right? Because Knesset Yisrael is to be viewed as that single unit. Asher b'chor b'ano, that the Torah Hashem was not given to you individually, alone, but rather as part of a collective tzibur. And therefore, right, that lesson of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazah, that concept that one is obligated to go with and to share, right, together and to celebrate with others. You know, the Netziv points out that that's one of the reasons that you have a Suda at the Lel Seder. It's a form of a Suda Soda on the Nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And just as, for example, when a person experiences an ace, Arbat Srichim Lahodos, right? The person gives a Karban Toda, a person celebrates with the Suda Soda, right? The necessity to go ahead and to not do so individually, but Kodichmin, right? Everyone has to participate, everyone has to celebrate together. The Netziv in Parshas Tzav writes the Chiddush that there's something quite unusual when it comes to Karban Toda. Karban Toda typically is Kodshim Kalim. And as Kodshim Kalim, one would have expected that a person has a couple of days to be able to consume the Karban. And that is not true when it comes to Karban Toda, a noted exception. You bring the Karban during the day, you only have a very short Zman Achila until the next morning, and the Chachamim declared, no, it's even shorter than that, Chatzel Salayla. So imagine a person in the afternoon offers a Karban Toda, and you'll tell the person, you know what, everything has to be gone, right, by Chatzel Salayla, and if not, you're going to violate the Isser of Nosa. No, if it's going to remain until the morning, and Isser Daraisa of Nosa. And what do you have to bring? A hefty animal with a combination of 40 loaves of Chametz and Matzah. No, in a word, much, much more than you individually can possibly eat. No? So the Netziv points out that's exactly the lesson. That if a person experiences that sense of Hoda, Arbat Tzrichim from the Hodos, this is not an individual expression. This is something that has to take place b'tzibur. And therefore, the Torah ensures that this will be b'tzibur by telling us that you offer the Karban Toda and the insistence on a hefty Karban with a very limited Zman Achila, because the only way you'll be able to fulfill the Mitzvah Achila is by inviting others to participate with you in that experience of Hoda'ah. Nedar Hashem HaShalem Negdana L'chol Amo. It has to be done B'chol Ha'am, the Netziv writes. B'chatzrat Zbeis Hashem, right, the Karban is offered, but B'socha Yerushalayim, right, is something that has to be celebrated in that public way. It emphasizes that quality, that element of the Kedusha Satsibur, which is something that is so vital and so critical. So therefore, as part of that broadest concept of Arvus, we discussed Arvus when it comes to a mitzvah, the concept of Yatzamotzi, Arvus in terms of the obligation of Tochacha, that at times one has to even be willing to admonish, to rebuke others in the performance of mitzvahs, the concept of lifnei v'lo sitei michshol, that one certainly cannot facilitate any possible dvar avera, And the Gemara points out in Shabbos and Daf Daled another fascinating application. Here the Gemara describes as follows. Is it ever permissible for an individual to violate an Avera in order to save a person from committing an Avera Chamur? Do we ever assume that that is true? That we assume the principle of Chatei Bishvil Shiyizka Chavercha. You commit a chayv in order to see to it that he will be spared. The Gemara on Shabbos on Daf Daled has the fascinating application. You have someone on Shabbos who goes ahead and places raw dough in an oven. Right? A time bomb, no? Right now, as of yet, he hasn't violated any malacha at all. Right? Because, you know, if it doesn't bake, he's not going to violate the malacha of afiyah, of ofer, the Shabbos. But you know what? The clock is ticking. No? In a few minutes, that really is going to happen. It's a very interesting issue. Malacha Shabbos, which malachos does one violate immediately? In which malachos have an extended window of time? It's clear that if you put food in the oven, you put this dough in the oven, in such a case, you have done an act that could lead to afir or bishul, but as of yet, afir bishul did not occur at all. The Rishash discusses an interesting issue found in Yerushalmi and so on. A person goes ahead and plants a seed, right, on Shabbos. All of a sudden a person has a terrible charat. I shouldn't have done that. Now quickly, he uncovers the seed. Now, is that called an act of Zoreya, no? Or does it require that Ashrash is necessary? That in order to be chayav for Zoreya, that something has to take root? You know, when's it going to take root? It can take a few days until it takes root, no? But when it takes root a few days late, on Tuesday, so it turns out that which you did on Shabbos is an act of Chilul Shabbos. Or do we argue that no, just simply putting the seed in the ground, that itself is considered to be the malacha of Zoreya? With afia in Bishul, it's clear that the act itself is not the Chilul Shabbos alone, but it's pending. It's based on that condition. So this person goes ahead and he does that. He places, right, this dough in the oven. And all of a sudden I see this occurring. He walks. No? Clock is ticking. If I will go ahead and remove the pas from the tanur, so he will not violate the Nisr of Chilul Shabbos. The difficulty that the Gemara points out is he didn't just simply take the dough and put it in the oven. He plastered it on the wall of the oven. And in order for me to remove it, I have to engage in something called Rediya Sapas. I kind of have to chisel it off of the wall of the oven. The Gemara says Rediya Sapas is an Isser Drabanan. And a fascinating issue the Gemara raises, so now what? Am I allowed to violate an Isser Drabanan, right, of Rediya Sapas, in order to save him from violating the Isser Daraisa of Chilul Shabbos? And that's where the Gemara writes, V'chi omrim l'adam chatei bishvil shiyizka chavercha. What do you mean? You're going to violate Navera in order to save him from? We wouldn't argue that that is true. And therefore we wouldn't allow you to violate Nisr Drabanan in order to spare him from. But Tosfos points out that that is not always the case. That is not always the case. In that context, that is when we assume that the chi omrim lo adam. After all, the person did so, as Tosfos points out, with absolute disregard for Shabbos. A person did so bemazed, with a sense of real defiance, negligence. So I'm going to run around violating Yisuri Drabanan to save him from violating Yisuri Daraisa. That I don't have to do. But Tosfos also gives examples where we would assume that chatei bishvil shiyizka chavercha. Tosfos gives a fascinating example, the sugim sochim adaf nun tes, right, as follows. Typically speaking, when a person offers karbanos b'mikdash Hashem, the first karban which is offered is the karban tamid shel ben arba'im. And then the last karban of the day is the karban tamid shel shachar in the morning. The last karban of the day is the karban tamid shel ben harbayim, and the other karbanos that are brought are sandwiched in between those two karbanos, and that's necessary. That's what we call the essay de hashlama. That one is not allowed to go in to offer a karban after the karban tamid shel ben habayim. There is a notable exception to that. That's the karban pesach, for example, where the karban pesach is brought after the karban tamid shel ben habayim on erev pesach. So therefore, based on the psukim, that is a clear exception, but other karbanos have to be offered before. So the Gemara describes in Sachim Adaf Nuntes, right, the following scenario. A person, erev pesach, comes to Mikdash Hashem. He wants to participate and offer his karban pesach, one hitch. That person was tamei. And in order to go ahead and to secure, to attain tahara, which would allow him to participate and partake of the Karban Pesach, he has to offer a Karban. Right now he's Mechusar Kippurim. But you know what? He showed up at the typical time for Karban Pesach. But wait, the Karban Mechusar Kippurim has to be offered before the Karban Tamid Shel Ben Harbaim. But if he doesn't offer the Karban Mechusar Kippurim, he cannot go ahead and participate in Karban Pesach. So now the Kohen is faced with a real dilemma. But now, if he accepts that Karban, he violates the Esse D'Hashlama. If he doesn't accept the Karban, that individual will not be able to participate in Karban Pesach. And you know what the Gemara tells us? The Kohen should accept his Karban in order to remove his status of Mechusar Kippurim. What about the Esse D'Hashlama? What about that? You know what the Gemara says? You're right. Under normal circumstances, would never tell you to do this. You know, we'll tell the guy, you know, next time you're in such a situation, come earlier. No, but right here and now, it's worth it. It's worth violating an Avera Kala to accommodate a mitzvah chamura. That's what the Gemara writes in Sachim. And Daf Nun Tes. Tosfos writes, you always have to know to weigh and to balance. When you have something that has an element of Avera, juxtaposed against something that has an element of a mitzvah, and you have to be able to determine, right? When do we assume that to accommodate that mitzvah, one can violate an Avera? How does that work? What exactly is the mechanism? That we're going to tell you, accept the karban because you're accommodating a mitzvah. One possibility Tosus assumes in Sachem and Afnantes is it works with the sense of essay dochalosase. Essay dochalosase. See, if an essay can be dochalosase, an essay can be docha in iser essay. In iser essay. So, Karban Pesach is a mitzvah sase. The essay, the hashlama, is more kal than a losase. It's what we call a lav haba miklal essay. It's an iser essay. So, Tosfos cites the following chiddush, that just as essay dochalosase, so too, a kiyum essay can be docha in iser essay. But Tosfos is bothered by the following. One of the requirements of essay dochalos essay, isn't that one word? Bi'idna, bi'idma. What does that mean? At the moment, simultaneously. At the moment that you violate the law, you are simultaneously fulfilling a mitzvah essay. That's what Tosfos is troubled by. That's not what is happening now. Here, quite different. No, you're violating an Avera now in order to subsequently accommodate a mitzvah. So that's what Tosfos discusses. When do we allow for an essay dochalos essay? When there is a gap between the violation of the law and the mitzvah that is being fulfilled. So Tosfos writes the following. If you can demonstrate that this is a mitzvah rabba, that the mitzvah outweighs the Avera, and again, you have to be very careful in terms of application, then we'll assume Essay Dochalosa say, even if, the Avera and the mitzvah are not simultaneous. But then Tosfos has a very different approach. It doesn't work with Essay Dochalosa say, but rather it works with the principle of Chatei Bishvil Shizka Chavercha. You're right. This isn't the normally speaking the appropriate thing for the Kohen to do, but, you know, sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes a person can be in a situation where anywhere he turns, there's an element of Aver. And somehow you have to navigate. You have to decide.
whether it is worth violating an Isser Kal to accommodate a mitzvah chamura. And sometimes, right, we would argue that yes, even though technically it's not esse d'chalos haseh, but nonetheless, that in fact can be done. So Tosos right, there are times, we'll have to discuss this at greater length. Now, these sugyas, when do we assume that that is true? When do we assume that is not the case? But at times where the Gemara acknowledges that in order to allow a person to accommodate a mitzvah chamura or to have a person avoid violating an iser chamur, right, a person could even violate an avera in the process in the spirit of chatei bishvil shiyas gechaver. So we'll have to discuss the parameters, right, of this concept and the balance in general. Right, sometimes when a person is in a situation where the ideal resolution is no longer an option, and almost a person has to choose between what we colloquially would term the lesser of two evils, and exactly when do we assume that a person can violate the Navera in order to accommodate an Itzah. So perhaps in the next year we'll elaborate on that point a little bit further, and then we'll continue with other aspects of Mitzvos, Dam Lechavero, Kibad Abayim, Bitochol, and Nichum Adelim, right, the next week.